Hey, everybody, and welcome back. For those of you who love instant gratification, this episode is going to be disappointing, right? Because it's coming out a few days late. Apologies. I know that UFC, like all the talking points are all beat up by everybody, but I still want to go take a moment and walk through the card and, just discuss each of the fights quickly, kind of recap what I thought about them, and dig into like all this Tyson Fury versus Ngannou shit and what that's going to mean for the sport. Because, man, what a huge announcement and what a huge moment for Ngannou. Like I said, just want to take a few minutes, talk about the card. Side note, though, I have started doing, if you're listening to this, you'll get irritated, but I've started doing ice baths, right? I started off with cold showers, worked up to ice baths, and I have these little food cubes. They're like, or food containers. They're like probably like 8 to 12 ounces. I fill them up with water. I've got like 12 of them, and I freeze them, then dump them in the bathtub. It's like the most economical way I can find to cool the water down without spending a fucking fortune, right? I never knew how cold it was. I just knew that it was fucking cold when I got in, right? And I finally bought like a little thermometer, and I was thinking maybe in like, you know, the low 50s, like 40s, I fucking measured it and it's 60 degrees. I was like, this is unfucking believable. Like, I thought that I was in it way colder. I didn't think it was in the 30s necessarily or even like the low 40s, but I was like, it's gotta be like low 50s. Nope, 60 fucking degrees. So to think about getting down into the 30s is really challenging. But I think I got to order more ice cubes and stuff. I mean, I still feel great when I do it, but man, it's definitely a tolerance. Or maybe it's not. Maybe you just jump straight into the cold fucking water and deal with it. But challenging. And I thought I was dealing with some shit and it's fucking 60 degrees. I felt like a pussy. But anyway, I've been doing that lately and it does help. And like, I feel like it gets a lot of the like fogginess that you feel in the morning out of the way. Like that much I do believe in. So I just couldn't believe how fucking warm it was. Anyway, let's see. Let's move on. Let's talk about the card now. I was just giving that little piece of advice about, like, I thought I was being tough hopping in it, and then I find out that it's fucking 60 degrees. Depressing. But anyway, let's recap UFC 290, and then we'll kind of dig into the Ngannou versus Fury stuff. So, UFC 290. Great fucking card. A lot of big moments. I think there were four finishes within the first minute, and just a lot of finishes in general, right? I'm going to skip through, like, you know, some of the prelims here and hit these main talking points, especially because this is out so late. But let's start talking about Robbie Lawler versus Nico Price. I know that everyone, and it is a fairy tale fucking ending. That is the way that you want to go out. But very seldom does it happen that way. I mean, and if you look at this, I think it was a pretty fucking big upset, too, that Robbie Lawler beat Nico Price. I mean, Nico Price is a long guy. He's awkward. He's explosive. But Robbie got him in that clinch and just started beating him the fuck up. You know what I mean? It's like, man, it's not the way that I expected it to go. Let's just say that, right? And I worry sometimes, and I don't want to turn this into a negative thing, because Robbie Lawler, it goes without saying, right? This is what I mean. Like, I'm getting this out late. A lot of the talking points have been beat up. He's had one of the best careers ever. If you look back at his, like, fights against Rory McDonald, obviously, you know, his war that he had against him, like, he is one of the most iconic UFC stars of all time and one of the most fan-friendly fighters ever, right? So it's not that I'm not happy for him. I just worry that sometimes that's what all of these guys who are fighting are looking for, and so often it's not the way it goes. You know, so often you extend your career out so long that you keep – you're like – hunting for this elusive win that's going to let you retire, and it just never happens, and you have to eventually accept it. You know, it's like the game is rough. It's a rough game to be in, and I think that Robbie going out there and what he did to Nico Price was incredible, but it was also a rarity, and it's something that, like, who's to say when they should retire? I think it, and he did win. That is the point ultimately, right? Like, the point is to win. Like, and he won. If he's capable of winning, who's to say that he shouldn't be fighting? But I just wonder what happens if Robbie and Nico fight 10 times. You know what I'm saying? And that's not the point either. That's not what happened. It was his retirement fight. He's going out on top. Great for him. But when I saw the matchup on paper, I didn't like it. And I was pleasantly surprised at how it turned out. I thought it was going to go much, much worse. You know? So, man, what a career for Robbie. What a way to cap it. But so often you watch your favorite fighters get beat up in their retirement fight, or they get beat up so bad they realize it's time to retire. You know, it doesn't often go like that. It's better to get out of the game early and save the damage. But my, I guess Robbie didn't need to get, like I said, I'm not the person to say whether he should be fighting or not. That's up to him, right? But he didn't need this fight to, like, go to the Hall of Fame. Robbie was a Hall of Famer for, he's been a Hall of Famer for years. You know what I mean? It's not like he needed those extra fights. So I would just like to see guys start getting out early when you start to see the decline, as opposed to accepting that you're already at the bottom and you're not going to be able to get back up there. You know what I mean? Some guys rebound, though. That's the hard part. I don't know. But anyway, I digress. Moving on. Bo Nickel versus Val Woodburn. This was a crazy performance from Bo, right? Getting the fight out of the way in the first minute. But I want to talk about, like, what a mismatch this was. I just feel like this knockout win, while it was incredible, is just getting overblown a little bit. You guys have got to realize, man, Val Woodburn is making his UFC debut against one of the most hype prospects in UFC history on one of the biggest main cards of the year during International Fight Week on short notice. Man, it's a tall, tall mountain to overcome, because don't get me wrong, Bo Nickel, I'm not saying he doesn't go through nerves and stuff, but he's been competing in high-stress situations since his whole adult life. The whole time he was in college, I mean, he's been on, like, I don't know about the world stage or a stage as big as the UFC, but he's been on a gigantic stage in the NCAA community, right, and the people who watch that. Those are high-intensity situations, and he's dealt with those his whole adult life. Don't get me wrong, going into an MMA fight would be extremely nerve-wracking, but Val Woodburn just jumped from the kiddie. It's like he went from a little fucking, like, kiddie pool with floaties onto the ocean. That's really the difference in skill level that you're seeing here. And Bo Nickel has had years and years and years, his whole childhood, to refine his wrestling technique. And he just knows what these moments feel like more than Val Woodburn does. And he's just more polished as an athlete right now. Woodburn is a guy who, if you watch his fights on YouTube and stuff, he does stay very composed with his striking, right? But he's a bit stiff. He's stuck in the mud and Bo's very loose. And I think a lot of that comes from, again, just the high-level competition. This is a fight that I personally feel like shouldn't have happened. Like, if I was a commission, I actually don't think this fight should be approved. If you look at Val Woodburn's, there's no way to do that, though, right? Like, and it's a way for the UFC to continually pump up their star. Like, this is a guy that he's supposed to go starch. But I just worry that people are like, oh, he's got hands. Yeah, he's got hands against a guy who's not fully developed yet. You know, I'm just being honest. Like, it was a great finish, but, like, I'm just not that impressed with it. Like, I feel like we're not going to learn about Bo Nickel until we start seeing some guys. Like, Trayshawn Gore would have been a more accurate, right? He's been through the tough house. He's fought in the UFC. He's got a little experience under his belt. Val Woodburn was in a fucking, like, very tough situation. So, man, we'll see. We'll see what's in store for Bo Nickel. I think we've known that he has hands. I think we've known that he has wrestling. What happens when he gets there against a guy who starts to present him with some adversity, though? I don't think Val Woodburn was ever going to be that guy in any department. Anyway, moving on. Dan Hooker versus Jalen Turner. This was a fucking great fight. And I gotta, like, apologize for sleeping on Hooker the way I did. I really thought Turner would dot him up. And it seemed like it was going to go that way through the first round. But, man, Hooker is just, I don't even want to, like, boil it down to him just being tough, because that part is undeniable, but he's skillful, and you forget what a veteran he is, and you forget how crafty he is, and you forget how good his footwork is, how good he is at holding distance, picking his shots, mixing up targets, mixing in the wrestling when it's necessary. I mean, man, he just does everything right, and he's a real veteran of the sport, and that showed in his fight against Turner. It showed that Hooker was the more experienced guy, you know? So, man, incredible performance from Dan Hooker, and I think it's obvious what a warrior and what a dog he is, and what a great fight this was. But I don't want to take away from the technical prowess. Jalen Turner is a fucking sharpshooter. He is fucking precise, man. Like, I really thought he was going to have an easier time with Dan Hooker, and then Hooker just started putting it on him, and again, showing that this is a fight. It's great that you're technical, but man, you got to be technical and fight, and I think Hooker is technical. He might not, if you watch, like, silhouettes of them, he might not look as clean as Jalen Turner does in those striking departments, but man, he's still technical and he knows how to fight, and he just took it to him, man. He took it to him, and I thought it was a fucking great win for Dan Hooker. Yeah, and by the way, some of the judging on this made me like terribly nervous, especially the Pantoja decision. This decision, even I thought it was obvious Dan Hooker won two rounds, but good thing a lot of these guys got finishes, man. Who knows what would happen if it goes to the judges? But anyway, great win from Dan Hooker. And again, just want to highlight how technical and skillful he was in that fight, as opposed to just being like, man, he's a warrior. Of course he is. We know that. We've seen the Poirier fight. We've seen all of his fights. But Hooker is a guy where I hate to call him a gate. Sometimes that's an important role in the UFC. I hate to deduce him to that, but like, do I think Dan Hooker's ever going to win a title? No. But you will find out if you are the real fucking deal or not when you fight Dan Hooker. You will find out whether you are fucking made for this or not. You know what I mean? He's going to bring it to you. And he did this. He did that to Turner. And Turner found out that he's got some things to work on if he wants to keep creeping up into that top 15, top 10. You know? So, yeah, man. Dan Hooker. Fucking legit. The next fight, this middleweight bout between Drickus and Robert Whittaker. I slept on Drickus in this one, too. But I said this in the breakdown, like, leading up to the fight. You have to be careful with him because he's awkward and he just, like, he knows how to win. And I think something that always sticks out about him is he never gives up on himself. It doesn't matter what situations you put him in. We saw Derek Brunson take him down before, right? Like, we saw him get, like, into the second round with Till and start getting dotted up on the feet. The man does not give up on himself. He keeps fighting. And he just, like, turned it into a fight. He switched his stance. Luke Thomas did a great breakdown on all the technicalities and stuff. If you guys go check that out, he goes into much more nuance about like all the striking exchanges and stuff, right? And just, you know, all of the things that led to Duplessis' victory. But he just fought him. Like, Whittaker was very technical through the first half of the first round, and that's how I kind of thought the fight was going to play out. He got the takedown, but then Duplessis got up, and I think he's deceivingly long. He covers a lot of distance with his punches, and he's willing to walk through some fire. Like, he was willing to walk through that jab of Whittaker that usually keeps people at bay. He was willing to just keep coming, and I think that kind of wore on Whittaker. I think he's strong. I think he's explosive. I think he has good cardio. And man, I will tell you what. When he put Whittaker on the ground, guys don't do that to Whittaker. Guys do not do that to Robert Whittaker. He beat the ever-loving shit out of Robert Whittaker on the ground. And it was because he was constantly moving from this position to here. Like, Whittaker would do something and he'd hit him. He does what a lot of guys, when they get to the ground, don't do. And that's, he mixes in his guard passing and his top pressure and his ground and pound. He uses all of them fluidly, and it just, man, it had Robert Whittaker in a world of trouble. If that fight goes another minute, Whittaker's getting finished. 100%. And you could see that when Whittaker went back to his corner, he looked defeated. He had that look in his eyes. Second round starts, he does a little bit better. But don't forget, too, that Drick has finished Robert Whittaker on the feet. It's not like this man is not dangerous on the feet. And the fact that when he starts going and, like, changing levels and mixing the striking fluidly, if you don't think this man is a legitimate challenge for Izzy, I don't know. I'm telling you what I saw from him. I might do a breakdown on it and just slow things down. What I saw from him in that, like, final minute, minute and a half, however long it was, when he got the takedown and he was on top of Whittaker, that is not a guy that you want on top of you. He just understands how to stay on top and how to do damage while he's there. He just keeps his opponents down. And Whittaker has had great takedown defense. Go look throughout his career at his fights like against like Yoel Romero. Excuse me, guys. But, man, what a performance. Don't get me wrong. I personally picked Whittaker. I thought the fight, this is all fucked up back here. I thought the fight was going to go very similar to how it did through the first minute of the first round, with Whittaker picking him apart and just kind of having his way and Duplessis getting confused. But that didn't happen. Duplessis always stays composed. He always gives himself a chance. Like I said, we saw that in the Brunson fight, the Till fight, this fight. He always just keeps coming, and he just knows how to win, and he knows how to fight, man. He just knows how to fight. So, interesting matchup between him and Izzy. That's a huge fight now, and especially all the beef with the Africa stuff. I won't get into all that. That's between them. But whatever, man. going to be a crazy fight, and I think it's a really interesting matchup. And I think Du Plessis has a real shot to dethrone the champ. We'll see. All right, co-main event was Alexandre Pantoja versus Brandon Moreno. I had Pantoja coming into this fight, and I thought that the judging on this one was off. I thought it was very obvious that that Pantoja won the fight. I think you can make an argument maybe that Moreno won three, right? I think I just watched this back, and I think I scored one. I watched it back the other day, so of course I already forget. I scored one definitely for Pantoja, two and three for Moreno, and then four and five for Pantoja. And three was tough. You could have given it to Pantoja, I thought even. But very close fight, very entertaining fight. And the thing that surprised me was that Pantoja came on so strong in four and five, because I really thought Moreno was going to have the advantage the longer the fight went on. And it just wasn't the case, man. Pantoja looked great. The thing that made me nervous, and I think the reason I really picked Pantoja coming into this fight, is because of the power difference. Man, when you get a guy who just like can hurt you when he hits you, it impacts your game plan. And Moreno looked much more composed, much better in his boxing-like situations. He wasn't lunging in so much, like recklessly. His hands were out in front of him like he was in the first fight against Pantoja. And obviously, it wasn't as dominant a performance from Pantoja. Like, Moreno had a really strong second and third round. But on the whole, he just kept coming. And he finds a way to, when you get into these exchanges and they're both throwing combinations, he seems to find a way to be the one that lands the significant strike there, right? He seems to be the one that is able to land the more, like, impactful shots in those exchanges. And I think that mattered a lot in this fight too. He was able to get to the back of Moreno a couple times, you know, and it just felt like to me like he started beating Moreno up the longer the fight wore on. So great win for Pantoja. Great dude. It's crazy that I don't know if you guys saw this thing, that he's been driving Uber Eats leading up to this fight. I mean, we'll get into fighter pay when we start talking about Ngannou and Tyson later, but what the fuck? You got a guy who's world class. That shouldn't even be a question. He shouldn't even be having to thinking about where his money comes from. He's the world fucking champion now. And he was a top contender. He should not have to be thinking about, what do I need to do to make extra money? Your shit should be taken care of, and you should be comfortable at that point. We'll get into that in a little bit. But let's move to the fucking main event. Alexander Volkanovski versus Yair Rodriguez. And everyone's talking about Volkanovski being the featherweight goat, and I thought he cemented that after he beat Max. After he beat Max, I was like, goddamn, he just beat the fucking shit out of the previous greatest featherweight of all time and beat him up bad, right? I personally thought Max won the second fight. I watched it back several times. I thought Max should have got the nod, but he didn't. And now on paper, Volkanovski has three wins over this man, right? And you saw what Max did to Yair. Like, he beat him up, right? But Yair presented a lot of challenges to Max, made things interesting. And the thing that I've seen different perspectives on this, right? I've seen people say that like Volkanovski took Yair down because he was afraid of the striking, but the actual finish stemmed from Volkanovski landing a right hand in one of their exchanges on the feet. You know what I mean? Like, Volkanovski putting Yair down on the ground and beating him up is just a smart game plan. It just is. Like, if he's getting the better of the exchanges and you can put him there, the onus is on Yair to get the fuck up. It's not on Volkanovski to not take him down or to be like, I'm gonna like stay on the feet with you because I feel like I need to prove something. Like, no, you're there to win the fight. But don't forget that the way the fight ultimately ended was on the feet in one of the exchanges. So these people saying that Volkanovski is afraid to stand with Yair, you're crazy. He hurt Yair, and then that's what led to the onslaught and Volkanovski picking up the finish. He hurt him on the feet. Volkanovski is undoubtedly the greatest featherweight of all time. It's not even close, in my opinion. If you look at his skill level and you just like use the eye test and look at his fight against Islam and how close that was, a lot of people think he won that. Look at his performances over guys in the featherweight division. He's not only the greatest featherweight of all time, he's starting to sneak into that fucking like John Jones, Amanda Nunes, Valentina, that type of territory where you start pulling away from the pack so fucking far. Demetrius Johnson's maybe the best example. You have pulled away from your division so fucking far that the challenges that are running out and the only options include moving up, right? That's what you're running into with him. And that's when you start talking about not just the greatest featherweight ever, he's starting to creep into all-time greatness. The same way Demetrius, John, Amanda, Valentina kind of up until recently did. Like, those are the people I think of when I think of dominant champions and all-time greats. George St. Pierre, you start thinking about guys like that, where you start thinking the contenders really don't have a chance, you know? So I think he's getting there, man. And I think that he might be the most overall skillful fighter that we've ever seen in the octagon. He might be the most well-rounded. He reminds me so much of GSP. So much, where GSP could just do everything. And I think Volkanovski, I think he maybe, it's a new game. I think he executes it at a higher level. Guys know more now. Like, it's just the nature of it is that it's always advancing, right? Like, and I think that when you watch Alexander Volkanovski fight, what you're witnessing is the best. Man, John Jones, you know, incredible. But when I watch Volkanovski and his footwork, I kind of think he's the most skillful active fighter in the UFC today. Like, in terms of being well-rounded, I really do. It's crazy to think that. Like, I'm not saying he's better than John or he's accomplished more, but, like, he can do everything, man. You know what I mean? Like, he can do it all. So he's definitely touching that greatness territory. But all-time greatness territory. But anyway, I got a few minutes here left. I want to take a little bit of time and talk about Ngannou versus Fury. What a fucking announcement this is. I mean, you got to think, with all the beef with Dana White and Ngannou leaving the UFC and Dana saying it's a gimmick fight against Fury and it'll never happen and blah, 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 and PFL's giving him all this money and they don't even know if the fight's going to happen. I kind of had a feeling when PFL announced that Ngannou wouldn't be fighting until 2024 that they knew that those talks might be serious and something might be happening before the end of this year. The fact that it's actually been announced, it's official, October 28th in Saudi Arabia, right? Massive fight. And I feel like people are going to be just as, if not more, interested in this than they were Conor versus Floyd. I mean, guys, I know he's going to get boxed up. I know that But if that motherfucker hits you in the mouth, you are going to sleep. If he lands that strike on Tyson Fury, it doesn't matter. He hits too fucking hard. And if he pulls this off, what a situation we are going to have. Because the UFC can't lay claim to having the greatest heavyweight fighter in the... There will be no doubt. Even if he goes in and looks okay against... Like, if Ngannou accomplishes this somehow... The amount of attention it's going to bring to PFL is going to be unprecedented. Think about it. If you are the UFC heavyweight champion, you are considered the baddest man in the world. If I understand that they got John Jones over there, but if Ngannou goes cross-sport and pulls this off and then goes back to PFL and starts starching guys there, you got the if he knocks Tyson out, everyone's going to say Ngannou is the baddest dude. Like, you have to see him versus Jones. You know what I mean? Like, but you can't lay claim. I don't think you can. John wouldn't be able to do that same thing. I don't like John's chances in a boxing match against Fury as much as I do Ngannou's, because I feel that Ngannou has a real chance simply because of the power. He'll never overcome the skill gap, and he most likely gets boxed up the same way John would. But John is never going to be able to land that one shot that would put Fury to sleep. You know what I mean? So if Ngannou comes, what if he pulls this off? What if he really goes in and fucking puts him out, and now you've got all this attention on PFL? And just speaking about PFL a little bit more, right? Like, in the topic of fighter pay, there's all these talks about PFL joining with Bellator. Man, the UFC thinking that it's invincible, I don't know. And you've got people like Jake Paul involved with PFL now who are huge on social media, and they're making it a point to, like, put emphasis on fighter pay and stuff. This is what I truly believe. That the most well-run professional sports organizations, MLB, NFL, NA, all of their contracts are public. The minute that a promotion starts letting their contracts go public, they win the race. Because now your contracts are going to be disputed amongst the public. They're going to be disputed on like large sports programs like ESPN, where they cover that kind of stuff. And the public will start pushing back if they feel that it's unfair, and it'll start getting, you know, like things will start being more reasonable. Once you go public with that kind of stuff, then you're going to have like an open, like, I think a lot of people don't take risk on MMA because they don't know what's out there. But once they know what they can achieve by taking that route, you're going to start seeing kids the same way they want to grow up to be an NFL player, want to grow up to be a UFC fighter, but maybe they want to grow up to be a PFL fighter. I don't know. I kind of think that the battle between promotion, it seems like the UFC can never lose, right? And right now they have the deepest and the most, like, they have the deepest, they do the best job of recruiting, and I think that's the most important part. But if an organization like PFL, it's kind of like, who wins the recruitment process? Who starts recruiting the better prospects? I think the company that goes public and lets their contracts get out to the world, right? Allows unions to develop, all that, whatever. I don't know how that shit works, to be honest with you, but like, I just know that when contracts go public, that is going to be the key. It'll put public pressure on them to make more money. They'll compare what the company's making to what the players are actually getting paid. You hear all these rumors and stuff, like the UFC's always like, oh, we take care of our fighters. Don't worry about it. We take care of them. And you hear some guys say, oh, I'm super happy with the UFC. They've always done this. They've always done that. Maybe they're handing out. I don't know what the fuck they're doing. But I just know if it goes public, the public would go, yeah, but like, you should be getting way more than that. Like, you think you're getting this, but you're actually kind of getting fucked. I'm telling you, man, go public with the contracts and the fighters will get what they deserve. It is as simple as that, right? But got to get a union or some shit together to like push that stuff through. I don't know. Anyway, I'm running out of time here, guys. I got to hop off. I got some shit to do, but just wanted to take a few minutes and get this out there as opposed to just not talking about anything going on, right? Like I said, Ngannou versus Fury is huge, and I think Ngannou could single-handedly have a major impact on the future of MMA, win or lose against Fury. If he wins, it certainly accelerates and helps things. But just my thoughts. Anyway, I'm signing off, guys. Thank you again so much for tuning in. Much appreciated. If you enjoyed the episode, go ahead, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, all that good shit we have to ask you guys to do. But if I don't remind people, they don't do it, right? So anyway, appreciate it. Have a good day, all, and bye-bye.